Translation by Srila Prabhupada. And thus I travel, constantly singing the transcendental message of the glories of the Lord, vibrating this instrument called a veena, which is charged with transcendental sound, and which was given to me by Lord Krishna. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The musical stringed instrument called a veena, which was handed to Narada by Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Linga Purana, and this is confirmed by Srila Jiva Goswami. This transcendental instrument is identical with Lord Sri Krishna and Narada, because all of them are of the same transcendental category. Sound vibrated by the instrument cannot be material, and therefore the glories and pastimes which are broadcast by the instrument of Narada are also transcendental, without a tinge of material inebriety. The seven singing meters, namely Sa, Sajja, Ri, Rishabha, Ga, Gandhara, Ma, Madhyama, Pa, Panchama, Dha, Devata, and Ni, Nishada, are also transcendental and specifically meant for transcendental songs. As a pure devotee of the Lord, Sri Narada Dev is always fulfilling his obligation to the Lord for his gift of the instrument, and thus he is always engaged in singing his transcendental glories and is therefore infallible in his exalted position. Following in the footsteps of Srila Narada Muni, a self-realized soul in the material world should also properly use the sound meters, namely sa, re, ga, ma, etc., in the service of the Lord by constantly singing the glories of the Lord, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Devadattam imam vinam swara brahma vibhushitam murchayitva harikatam gayamanas charamyaham. And thus I travel, constantly singing the transcendental message of the glories of the Lord, vibrating this instrument called a veena, which is charged with transcendental sound and which was given to me by Lord Krishna. So, Prabhupada mentions there in the Linga Purana, there's a history of Narada Muni spoken in the Linga Purana. And there's also a little, well, not even a description, but there's a brief comment about the seven singing meters. So I don't know if anybody else knows about that, but it's not something I know anything about, really. The seven singing meters, which are transcendental and specifically meant for transcendental songs. So I guess the idea is that everything should be used in Krishna's service. I mean, that's the basic principle. And by using everything in Krishna's service, then we personally can come to a level of Krishna consciousness, self-realization. Which is one of the marked differences, I suppose, between like what ISKCON is presenting philosophically and culturally compared to what the vast majority of spiritual organizations are presenting is the concept of Yukta Vairagya. Because in impersonalist philosophy, it's considered that there's Sat and Asat, there's the eternal spiritual world and there's the illusory material world. The illusory material world doesn't factually exist, therefore it should be renounced. Therefore everything should be given up, including the senses, the mind, the intelligence, the body. Everything should be given up in order to come to a platform of self-realization. So we also agree that everything should be given up, but we say everything should be given up for Krishna's satisfaction, for the satisfaction of the Supreme. Therefore, we don't neglect the senses or the mind or individual ability or that type of thing. We engage them in Krishna's service. Dovetailing, isn't it? So, dovetailing is also You know, it's an amazingly powerful, subtle principle of engaging in spiritual life, and it's also the biggest excuse for sense gratification known to the spiritual community. You know, this whole idea of engaging our senses in Krishna's service. We have to be careful that we are actually engaging our senses in Krishna's service and not just making a dishonest excuse that what we actually want to do is sense gratification, but spiritual sense gratification. You know, because spiritual sense gratification means Krishna's sense gratification. It's not our sense gratification. If we're enjoying, then that's not spiritual, is it? That's material, you know. So there's a fine balance between spiritual life and material life in the world of Yukta Vairagya. And really it comes down to honesty. You know, each individual has to fly their own plane. We have to be honest with ourselves if we want to achieve the goal. Regardless of how close a relationship we have with anybody in this world, at the end of the day, we have to leave everything and go our own path. So what they used to say in school, you're only cheating yourself, you know. When kids are cheating in class, the teacher used to say, you're only cheating yourself. Which is not exactly true, because in school you're cheating the teacher, because, you know, if you're successful then you get away with it, so you're cheating them. But in Krishna consciousness, actually, if you're cheating, you're just cheating yourself, because we're all just like straws in a stream coming together for some time and then we'll go our own way. So we need some integrity in our own life, you know. In this chapter, then, Narada Muni is describing his history, how he became self-realized, essentially. And the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is a series of different histories of devotees becoming self-realized, achieving Krishna Prema. So the presentation, you know, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is supposed to be offering the facility for individual souls to attain Krishna Prema. So this is our book of loads and loads of examples of how different devotees attained Krishna Prema. So this is Narada Muni's story. Sorry, something popped in my mind. I was going to say it, and then I didn't, and then now I can't remember it. So the question is, we want to engage in spiritual life. So what is spiritual life, first of all? In the material world, it's often easier to describe something spiritual in terms of negation, like what it's not, isn't it? So it's neti neti. So Prahlad Maharaj actually advises this process, not this, not this. So you start to eliminate everything that is not Krishna consciousness, and then what you're left with is Krishna consciousness. So it's good to study then what is material life in order to understand what is spiritual life. We can think a little bit about what is material life. So essentially, material life centers around the body. Body means the physical body and the subtle body, so the body and the mind. Whenever the body is spoken, it means the body and the mind. So the body and the mind, well, specifically the body goes through six changes: birth, growth, reproduction, maintenance, or stays for some time, then it dwindles, and then it disappears. That's the nature of everything. Every living organism in the material world goes through these stages. So if we're thinking, I'm not the body, then we should analyze, is that thing, you know, my sense of self, the thing that I think I am, is it falling into these categories, you know? Has it been born? Has it grown and changed? Has it produced some byproducts? Is it hanging around for some time, and then does it gradually dwindle, and then will it vanish? That's the body, isn't it? So that's not what we are. Similarly, the mind changes. Okay, the mind is transferred from one body to another, isn't it? The soul, Like the air carries aromas, so the soul is carried from one body to another through the mechanism of the subtle mind, in the same way the air carries aromas. But through the course of our life, we find our mind changing, you know, over the years, over days, over hours, over minutes even. So when we observe the mind acting, we can begin to wonder, well, like, why am I putting so much faith in the mind? Why am I so concerned with what the mind is telling me, you know? Because the mind is coming up with so many ideas all the time, so many opinions, and is so stubborn in its attitudes towards life. But then, if you actually think about it, like, I'm not the mind. Why am I so concerned with what my mind is telling me? This message is given through the Vedic teachings that, like, we're obsessed with the mind, isn't it? We're obsessed with our mind and what the feelings that are going on in the mind. But as one person pointed out, one sadhu pointed out, the point is to go beyond the body and the mind. So in order to go beyond the body and the mind, you have to have a healthy body and mind. Because depending on your advancement in Krishna consciousness, like if you take someone who's a pure devotee, like there was a class a few days ago, and he was, Dhyana Thai Prabhu, he was talking about the guy with the multicolored coat, Jason, wasn't it? Jason, yeah. Huh? Joseph, that was the one, yeah. So, Jason, someone else. So Joseph, and he's not bothered, doesn't he? He's peaceful. So he's sold into slavery by his family. He didn't have to go for counseling about it. You know, he was just peaceful. And then, what was it, the queen accused him of violence, and then he was locked in jail. He was still peaceful and happy and content. So if somebody's got a high degree of spiritual advancement, then they can tolerate a lot of disturbances in the body and the mind. If someone has a low degree of spiritual advancement, they can only tolerate a little bit of disturbances. Everyone can tolerate some disturbances in the body. You know, like, you could be, you're practicing your sadhana, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you got a pain somewhere in your body. It's a bit of a pain, you can still focus your mind. But if the pain comes, it's too much, then you can't practice Krishna consciousness anymore, isn't it? The only thing you can think of is the pain in your body. And the same with the mind. If your mind is too disturbed, then you can't focus anymore. So you need to have a peaceful mind. So in order to go beyond the body and beyond the mind, you have to have a healthy body. Because then your body's not giving you any trouble, so you can practice your sadhana and go beyond it. And the same with the mind. So we don't say, like, I mean, it used to be kind of years ago, wasn't it? Just ignore the body. Your body's getting ill, and you just, like, push through it, and then your body gets so ill that you can't even function anymore, and then you have to go to the hospital. Whereas if you had have addressed it in the beginning, in the early stages, you wouldn't have had to spend all those weeks in the hospital with your, you know, really bad disease. And the same with the mind, you know. If we keep on top of the mind and keep it in a healthy condition, then we can not be so bothered by it. So that's the idea. But then the material life then, of course, it means endeavoring hard for maintenance and for sense gratification, isn't it? First is maintenance. Work very hard to make sure everything's okay. And then if everything's okay, then we should enjoy a little bit because, you know, we've worked so hard, we deserve it. So there was a class yesterday, Prabhupada was giving a class yesterday, and he was giving a story. I couldn't quite make out the word. There was a brahmana, like, wearing a sacred thread, and he was pulling a trailer. I think it was a trailer? It's Taylor. Okay, so it's Taylor, yeah? Yeah, Prabhupada, he uses that quite a bit. He says Taylor, and he gave another example that sometimes in India people shout at him, "Hey, Taylor," whereas they're talking to the person, but they're identifying him with the activity that he's doing. He's saying we become so absorbed in the activity that we take on that identity, you know. We think, I am a doctor, or I am an engineer, or whatever it is. So we're identifying. So Prabhupada was saying that he was sweating. He had a Brahmin thread on, but he was sweating. And he was saying, that shouldn't happen. You know, we're not supposed to be working hard just to get by in the world. It's not normal, actually. But the problem is that if you go and hang out in the crazy house, then things that are not normal, you begin to think they're normal because everybody's doing it. So in the Western world, like working really, really hard, sweating just to get money, is normal. You know, it's normal life and it's healthy. It's considered healthy. And then you get job satisfaction and you have opportunities for vertical and lateral mobility. So you can get promoted in your job or you could move sideways and do a different role within the same company. And there's like so much variety and opportunity in your career, you know, and it's a whole thing, and it's like it's considered necessary now for a healthy mind and a healthy life to have that situation. But actually it's completely mental, you know, because that's not sane life. That's not what life is for. That's the life of animals. Like the Prabhupada said that in the class. He said what he's doing, he's pulling a cart. That's you could get a donkey to do that, you know. You don't need a human being from a Brahmana family. He had the Brahmana thread on. So you don't need a human being to pull a cart. You can, if you're doing a job that a donkey can do, it doesn't really say much, does it, about your human form of life? So actually what we're supposed to do is just a minimum to get by. And it's not laziness. That's the funny thing. People accuse devotees then of laziness, but it's not laziness. They're lazy because that's the easy option, actually. Like, they're going out grafting hard all day, working hard all day, and it's like, it's not easy. They're not lazy. But their manda, that's the Prabhupada is saying, manda sumanda matayo, isn't it, that verse? That they're lazy in terms of disciplining themselves to come to a level to practice what human life is supposed to be practiced for. You know? So we're supposed to come out of that. And again, it's the point of dovetailing, you know. So if a person has a tendency to work very hard, you could work very hard for Krishna. But we should know that by working very hard for Krishna, we should be coming to a point of developing a taste for hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. That's Sushusho Shadadanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Shyan Mahat Sevaya Vipra. Is that right, Punya Shravana? Huh? Punya Tirta Nishavana. So the point is, Vasudeva Kataruchi, we should have a ruchi, a taste for Vasudeva Kata. We should have a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. That's the whole idea. And that's actually, Bhagavat Marg means hearing and chanting. So all you have to do actually in your life is hear and chant about Krishna. But we can't do that all day long. We can do it for some time. And as we practice, we can do it for a longer time. But generally, there's a tendency for us to want to engage in different activities. So therefore, what we do is we follow the Pancharatra Marg also. Pancharatra is a Tantra Shastra, which means Tantra, kind of difficult to understand, for me at least, on what exactly it is. But the essence of Tantra, as far as I understand it, Tantra means Yukta Vairagya, in a sense. You're using your mind and your senses to develop spiritual consciousness. So in Krishna consciousness, we have various activities to be engaged in. But the point of the activities is to come to a spiritual level, a transcendental platform. And on the transcendental platform means we become absorbed in transcendental sound vibration. Because actually the only thing that exists is transcendental sound. Isn't it? Like they say that everything originates from sound. So it's kind of hard to get our head around that. How can like concrete and wood and all these things originate from sound? But by being trained up under the guidance of a self-realized spiritual master who has realization of what transcendental sound means, we can begin to understand how actually, it's like Prabhupada says in the purport, the transcendental instrument is identical with Lord Krishna and Narada because all of them are of the same transcendental category. Sound vibrated by the instrument cannot be material. Therefore, the glories and pastimes which are broadcast by the instrument of Narada are also transcendental without a tinge of material inebriety. So, the Krishna and Narada and the Veena and the sound coming from the Veena are all of the same transcendental category. means everything's coming from the same source, which means the transcendental sphere, which means transcendental sound. So what's happening now with our speaking and hearing is called Vaigri. There's four classifications. Krishna explains in the 11th canto. Again, it's a very difficult subject, but there's para, pasha, difficult to even remember the names, para, pashati, I might get that wrong, majjhima, and vaigri. Parapashanti, I think, majjhima, vaigri. So the idea is that the most gross level is this vaigri. Now, before the sound comes out into the external world, the sound is generated, they say, in the throat, so it's in the prana, in the subtle airs, life airs in the body. It generates the sound. Now, prior to that, the sound is generated in the subtle body. You know, like, if we're not talking, sometimes we talk to ourselves, you can hear a voice in your head. But more subtle than that, the sound is actually vibrating in your subtle body without being articulated into words prior to that. And prior to that, the sound originates actually in the spiritual sphere, which is why Omkara, the transcendental sound in the Vedas, Omkara, it originates in the spiritual world. It's a spiritual sound. And from that spiritual sound, all of the creation, Krishna's different energies, become manifested. So the point is that when we're speaking here, different words have different meanings. There's a meaning associated with the word, isn't it? So, like, for example, someone can start abusing you in German, let's say, if you don't speak German. But if they say it in a nice way, you won't even know, you won't be offended, because if they say it with a nice tone of voice, you would, because you speak German. But so if there's a language that you don't understand, so a person saying, oh, hello, how are you? But they're actually like abusing you, but they're saying it in a nice tone of voice. You don't become upset because you don't understand it. Whereas if they say it in a language you understand, then you become offended because you understand the meaning behind the words. That's because the material world is the world of duality. There's a difference between the sound and the meaning. But in the transcendental world, Prabhupada says, the transcendental instrument is identical with Lord Sri Krishna and Narada because all of them are of the same transcendental category, and the sound itself is of the same transcendental category. So spiritual sound, there's no distinction between the sound and the meaning, isn't it? That's like Krishna and Krishna's names are identical. Krishna is Krishna's names, because there's no distinction. But because we're so used to a distinction, we're chanting Hare Krishna and we're thinking, oh, when will I come in contact with Krishna? But we already are in contact with Krishna. Just because we're covered by illusion, we don't experience that. But we're in contact because the sound and the meaning behind the sound is not different. That's the difference between material sound and spiritual sound. So spiritual sound, so even on the subtle level, in the subtle body, there's a meaning, and then that meaning is translated into some sound. And even before people have language, like we're speaking in, you know, a particular language. But you see, when a baby is born, a baby doesn't speak a particular language, but it manages to communicate its emotions through sound, isn't it? When a baby's crying, you know it's upset. When it's happy, you know it's happy. Because the feeling is inside. And then through the mechanism of the subtle body, that feeling comes out through different sounds. And then you can pick up on that. So the meaning or the feeling is already the first thing. But in the spiritual sound, the meaning and the sound is the same thing. So that's a conception that has to be understood, actually, in order to advance in Krishna consciousness. Like specifically in this verse, that's the point Prabhupada is making, that the transcendental sound is identical with Krishna and Narada and the instrument that's producing the sound. So devotees are not lazy. Devotees are making the effort to try and understand, who am I? What is my function? So spiritual life, that material life means working very hard for maintenance and sense gratification. Spiritual life means it's centered around Atma, which means the self. So this conception of the self is intrinsic to the soul. Therefore, whatever our position in life, we have some conception of who we are. There's a conception of self. Now, there's a school of thought which says that the idea of self has to be eliminated completely. But the Vaishnava philosophy doesn't agree. It says this, the conception of self has to be understood in relationship with the Supreme Self. Because Krishna has a sense of self. Krishna has a conception of who he is. Therefore, Krishna's expansions, his separated expansions, and his Vishnu Tattva also, all have a conception of self, because we all have the same qualities as Krishna in minute quantity. So we have a conception of self. But due to the influence of Krishna's illusory potency, we're projecting our sense of self onto something which is not ourself. You know, and that's just the basic problem. So when something happens to the body, we think that happened to me. When something happens to the mind, we think that happened to me. So the conception of self has to be purified through devotional service, which means through guidance by a bona fide spiritual master. So the whole thing actually is very easy, but at the same time it's very difficult to capture, because we're not trained up in this type of thing. We're trained up, we go to school and they tell us you have to work very hard to make money, because if you don't make money then you won't be able to enjoy, and if you don't enjoy then what, you know? But you can look at the example of self-realized souls. They're not bothered by like, there's one story I heard. There was a group of sannyasis in Rishikesh, and one of them took an idea. He didn't like how the cows were being treated in Rishikesh. He said, this is wrong. It's against Vedic culture to mistreat the cows like this. So he decided to start a protest. So he went out on the street and started shouting and making a big fuss. And the police, local magistrate, didn't know what to do, so they decided to arrest him and put him in jail. So they took him and put him in jail. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Kijai. So he's in the jail. And what happens in the jail? They put you in a room, and then they gave him some sabji and chapatis. And then they all noticed he was missing in the ashram, so they went asking around. They went downtown asking around, where has anybody seen him? It turned out he got arrested, so they went down to the jailhouse, and they went in to see him and said, oh, what happened? And he told them the story, and they said, oh, that's terrible. And he said, no, it's not. It's great. They give you a sabji and chapatis here. Whereas in the ashram, what they do is they sit in a room and they meditate, you know, internally, and they just have some chapatis. So in the jail, he's doing exactly the same thing, but he gets some sabji as well. So he was thinking, this is brilliant. So then all the other sannyasis went out and they started a big protest, and they got arrested as well. And then they were all in the jail. And it's like, oh, this is great, you know. So the point being, if a person has such minimal desires, like if you're actually on a level where you don't have desires, you know, just a few chapatis to fill up your stomach and then get on with your business of inquiring, tattva jigyasa, inquiring about the absolute truth, well, then what do you need in life, you know? So we have loads of desires, don't we? So therefore, we need a house, and we need a car, and we need a family, and we need social and psychological support, and we need all of these things. But all these things are not actually necessary on the spiritual platform. They're necessary for us in the position we're in, so they shouldn't be neglected. But at the time when we're seeing to our necessities of the moment, we should know that ultimately these things are not required. Like in our pure state, the things are not required. So how to come to a level, how to move from material life to spiritual life? The point was made on Monday, because in the previous verse, Prabhupada says in the purport, causeless mercy. And there's a topic about causeless mercy in ISKCON. It's kind of a thing, but I suppose it's not a huge thing, but if somebody comes across it, there's certain devotees are talking about causeless mercy. There's no such thing as causeless mercy, because the argument is given that, well, the mercy can't just be completely random. you know? It can't just be random that somebody gets Krishna's mercy and someone else doesn't. There must be some cause behind it. So the causeless mercy is because of some sukriti that you've done in your in the past that you don't know about. But the point then is that why do you get that sukriti in the past? Why do you get some pious credit in the past that leads you to getting causeless mercy? So it seems that, like, if you approach things, sometimes approaching things from a material point of view, you'll get the wrong answer. We have to approach things from a spiritual point of view to get the right answer. Like, there was a question a few days ago about when the universe is wound up in Lord Brahma, does Narada become wound up in Lord Brahma? Or does it, you know, this kind of thing, like what happens to Narada? But the thing is that because we're in illusion, because we're in a dream, we're trying to see reality from the point of view of the illusion. We're trying to understand Krishna from our point of view. But you can't do that. You have to understand Krishna from Krishna's point of view. There's a whole topic in the Vedas called Drig Drishya Vichar. Who is the seer and who is the seen? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, his conclusion is that Krishna, because Krishna is the seer, we're the object which is seen by Krishna. So if we want to see the truth, we have to try and understand that Krishna is the seer and we're the object. Whereas if we're thinking that I'm the object, I'm the seer, then we're trying to understand everything in terms of my conceptions. But my conceptions are covered by illusion. So the spiritual world is the thing that exists. And Narada Muni has free access to all areas of the spiritual world. He's completely free to move wherever. Sometimes the material world is manifested within a corner of the spiritual world, isn't it? That's how it's described. Somewhere the material world is manifested, and somewhere, and then it's unmanifested. So we're thinking that Narada Muni, he can travel through the material world. So what happens then when the material world is unmanifested? But the material world being unmanifested has no significance or consequence to a liberated person, because it just comes and goes. It's like a cloud in the sky, it comes and goes. You know, so like if there's a cloud in the sky and somebody has a jetpack and flies into the cloud, and then the cloud dissolves, and then you think, oh, where's that person gone? That person's situated in reality. So just because an illusory thing comes and goes, it doesn't have any effect on that person's situation. He's not bound to enter into the body of Mahavishnu, or he's not bound to, you know, by anything. That's the whole idea of spiritual freedom. So the same thing, the same spiritual freedom, you have to apply. Krishna's got full freedom to do anything that he wants. And to give causeless mercy to a living entity, Krishna's not bound by any laws or any rules that we consider significant in this world. He's not bound by reason. He's not bound by karma. He's not bound by any, you know, technicalities which state that he should act in a particular way. So the verse, like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's Brahmanda Brahmita Kona Bhagyabana Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So according to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary systems, and some are going down to the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service. So how do we get the creeper of devotional service? According to our karma, we're wandering throughout the universe. It doesn't say according to our karma we get the seed of devotional service. It says someone who is very fortunate. Now, what does that mean, you know? Someone's very fortunate. It means you don't really know, isn't it? There's no real way to know. There's no real answer. It's like, if you can put on paper that if you do this, and you do this, and you do this, then you come to Krishna consciousness, you become Krishna conscious. Well, then that means that Krishna consciousness is dependent on a mechanical process, which it's not. Krishna consciousness is dependent on Krishna. So you say, oh, it's just like Krishna whimsically gives mercy to one person and not another. And you say, well, if you want to use the word whimsically, then yeah. But Krishna, it was by the grace of Krishna. That's what the Prabhupada says in that translation. If he's very fortunate, he associates with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. So what causes Krishna's grace? Well, pleasing the spiritual master causes Krishna's grace. But how do you please the spiritual master? You have to come in contact with him first. So how do you come in contact with him? Well, if you're very fortunate, you'll come in contact with him. So you go round and round in circles. There's no answer to the question. So the only answer is, well, there's causeless mercy. There's no cause behind it. You just have to accept. And that's the whole principle of Vaishnav philosophy, is surrender. It's like, well, what can you do, you know? Surrendered, isn't it? Like a little baby. What can a baby do? You're dependent, aren't you? You're completely dependent. You're surrendered to your caregivers. You're dependent. So we were all babies and we were all dependent, and then we grew up and decided, you know what, I'm not being dependent anymore, I'm being independent, you know, from now on. I've had enough of this and taken matters into my own hands. I'm going to be the boss of my life. And it's a complete illusion, because not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. And as we get older, we just get more into Maya. We get more into illusion, thinking that I'm the controller of my situation. Whereas in actual fact, we're not the controller. So the only thing we can do is accept the reality that's being presented, that our position in relation to Krishna is like the position of a baby in relation to the parent or the caregiver. That you don't, you know, what can you can't do anything. So, in the purport, again, it says, Krishna is situated in everyone's heart, and if one desires something, Krishna fulfills one's desire. If the living entity, by chance or fortune, comes in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement and wishes to associate with that movement, Krishna, who is situated in everyone's heart, gives him the chance to meet a bona fide spiritual master. So if by chance or by fortune we come in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. So by some chance or by some fortune we've come in contact with the Krishna consciousness movement. So in one sense, like for us, it doesn't really matter, causeless mercy or not causeless mercy. The real thing is to now make an endeavor to try and take shelter of the instructions and try and make our lives successful. But to do it in the proper mood, I mean, personally, my understanding is to do it in the proper mood, we should understand that the reason we've come in contact with Krishna consciousness is either by chance or by good fortune. It's not something that we did ourselves, because I'm so brilliant, therefore I deserve it. We should understand that it's undeserved. It's coming from Krishna's mercy. Because as soon as we think, oh, I deserve it, and we become puffed up in that way, then the whole thing just dissolves and disappears. And there was there's a devotee, Tribhuvanas Prabhu, his name was, and he was explaining a point. He said, Maya is an excellent thief. So if you go home or to your bed, to your bunk in the ashram. So if you go home and somebody's stolen something from your house, someone's stolen your television, or someone's stolen your sleeping bag, let's say you're sleeping, but someone's stolen your sleeping bag, you think, ah, oh, someone's stolen my sleeping bag, you know? But Maya is such an expert thief that she can go into your room, steal your sleeping bag, you'll go back to your room and you'll still see your sleeping bag sitting where it was, but your sleeping bag's not there. She's stolen it, but you're not even aware she's stolen it. Similarly, Maya can steal your Krishna consciousness in such a way that you think you're still Krishna conscious, but you're not Krishna conscious. You're full of anarthas. You're full of pride, arrogance, I'm talking about myself here. You know, you've got all these anarthas, and you don't have any Krishna consciousness, but the external shape is still there, so you think, yeah, I've got my Krishna consciousness. So for that reason, I think it's worth discussing the idea of causeless mercy, because it's connected to the idea of, do we deserve, you know, are we arrogant in thinking that I deserve this position? Because just like that, the whole thing can just be dissolved, but dissolved in such a way you don't even realize that it's been dissolved. So more importantly for us as a movement, in order to be integrous to the desires of the founder of the movement. More important for us is to try and provide a facility for other people to get causeless mercy. You know. And we do that by following the instructions, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. So I'd like to say one thing, which I don't want to be taken the wrong way in terms of criticism or something. It's just an observation. There's a mood sometimes, I've heard it online, that we come together, we do kirtan, so we close the doors of the temple, you know, invite everyone in, close the doors, and then in the same way that Lord Chaitanya and his associates at Shiva Sangam performed Prem Kirtan, then we call out to Lord Nityananda, and we try and attain Prem Kirtan in that way, you know. What I'd just like to make a comment, that my understanding is that's not following in the footsteps of the acharyas, that's imitating the acharyas. Because like Prabhupada gave the example of Haridas Thakur, didn't he? Is that we don't imitate Haridas Thakur and try and chant, you know, 3 lakhs of names a day. We follow the instructions of the spiritual master. He tells us what to do and we do it. So in the same way, like, you don't get many devotees really going off trying to do that, sitting in a solitary place, you know, chanting, 192 rounds a day. You don't get many devotees trying to do that. But there is a tendency in our movement to try and do other stuff, like close the doors and have this Prem Kirtan, which is not a bad thing, is it? Like closing the doors and having an ecstatic Kirtan. It's not a bad thing. But what we have to remember is that there are different instructions for different devotees according to the advancement of the devotee at that particular time. So you may not get the full benefit according to what you need to do. You know, we have to be scrutinized by a self-realized sadhu and told you should do this. There's purport in the Bhagavatam, in the fourth canto, Prabhupada said the spiritual master, he recognizes the condition of the disciple and he advises that disciple, you should engage in this service and you should engage in that service. So it's not that all the instructions are just like a blanket instruction for everybody. There are blanket instructions for everybody, but not all of them. So our instruction in our society is that we should take the holy name out to the streets, because there's millions of people outside who need to get some causeless mercy. You know, it's like, even they say, like Namabas, which one is it? There's different types of Namabas, and one of them is to chant in jest, like jokingly. So you take the Harinam out, and if anybody just dances along or that type of thing, they're getting the seed of bhakti, the seed of devotional service in the heart, and it will fructify at some point. So our instruction actually is to take the holy name out on the street, to take Prabhupada's books out on the street, to take prasadam out on the street, and to distribute profusely as much as we can according to our capacity. And in that way to try and spread the causeless mercy to other living entities. So I'll stop there. Apologies for anything wrong that I said. Any comments or corrections or questions?